Hey people, are you in the market for a very cool and unique pair of sunglasses? Well, today's episode is being sponsored by Retrospects at the Cosmopolitan Hotel of Las Vegas. I've been wearing sunglasses from Retrospects for almost 5 years now, and honestly, there's nothing better. They have all the original stuff. They do restoration, they do prescription, they do it all. To receive 10% off your first purchase and free shipping for a limited time anywhere in the U.S., email them at lasvegas@retrospects.com. You can also visit their website at www.retrospects.com. We are also sponsored today by Cape Cod Polish and Cloth, the only cloth that cleans, polishes, and protects. To get your Cape Cod Polish and Cloth kit today, go to www.capecodpolish.com. In the kit, you get 12 metal polishing cloths, a buffing cloth, and a pair of reusable gloves. It's the best $20 you'll ever spend. Okay, on with the show. This is one of the most exciting interviews I've ever done. It's a personal one. Those of you who are music fans or pop culture fans or guitar fans and watch fans alike, you'll all get so much out of this show. I have the honor and privilege of interviewing very dear friend, rock guitar god, Elliot Easton, also known as to me Uncle Elliot of the Cars, and his new band, The Empty Hearts. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
What's going on there, watch fans? I'm on the phone with legendary guitarist, or as I know him, is Uncle Elliot. How are you doing, Uncle Elliot?
Hi, Amit, or as I know him, Rabbi, because Amit has been for many years my watch rabbi, my counselor, and my consultant on all things horological.
Thank you, Uncle Elliot. And Uncle Elliot, and to those of you out there who have no idea what we're talking about, Uncle Elliot is... Elliot Easton is his real name. He's, you know, guitarist for the Cars. He's absolutely legendary. This is one of my favorite interviews to do because it's on such a personal level. Uncle Elliot, do you want to kind of tell people how we met?
Like, I would be happy to, Rabbi. I was playing at the time in Boston with Creedence Clearwater, and for years I was looking at ads and reading about Amit's family store in Harvard Square, and I know in Burlington there was one. During those years, I mean, everybody knew that store, and when I'd see pictures, I think, my gosh, this is the biggest watch store I've ever seen. They have everything. So when I went to Boston and I had a day off, I thought I would make a little pilgrimage and go to Harvard Square because I wanted to see this store. And I walked in, and Amit was behind the counter, and he welcomed me over, and I don't think I've ever made friends with anybody faster. We just hit it off immediately. He asked me what I did. I told him. He told me some of his other clients that were in music and other fields, and it was interesting to me. And we just got on like a house on fire just right from the start. We both love watches, and Amit's a big music fan, it was just really very easy. You know, some people it's a struggle with, and some people it's just easy from the beginning. And with Amit and I, it's been easy. And if we don't talk to each other for a couple of years, when we do talk, it's like no time has passed. It's just one of those kind of friends.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Uncle Elliot. That means a lot to me.
That's the truth.
It's absolutely on both sides because, you know, I hadn't spoken to Uncle Elliot in a long time, and I've wanted to do this interview for a very long time, and we all have lives. Life goes on, and things happen. And
My gosh, so much has happened in both of our lives since that first meeting. Did I leave anything out that you want to add about how we met, or is that pretty much your recollection?
That's exactly my recollection.
And then it may have been the second time I visited Amit. We went around the corner to your uncle's Indian restaurant and sat down and had a nice chicken tikka masala.
It was amazing.
And it was just like family, you know. It was just the greatest.
It was like family. That's when I realized that I was a Hindu. the best of both worlds. And we kind of like bonded even further because we took it outside the shop and we bonded over curry. And
yeah.
It's almost like bonding over going to a Jewish deli and bonding over matzo ball soup. It's the equivalent of that. So
I think there's a lot of similarities in the two cultures, and your family was very success oriented and education oriented and good business people, and that's something that's very familiar to me in the culture that my background is from, and I think, you know, the family vibe and just the way of dealing with the public, and it felt very familiar to me.
1,000,000%. And I think also it's, Uncle Elliot, I think it, and please, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I think there's a deep emotional connection as well, which is something that I don't think, you know, like, you know, it takes years and years and years with friendships to understand what that really means. But
that's right.
I really think that you and I had it from the beginning.
Yeah, well, some people you're just supposed to meet. I don't know any other way to say it. There's just some people in this world that you're meant to meet, and you and I were meant to get together, and it's been nothing but a pleasure being friends with you.
I feel the same, and I, you know, then when I moved to L.A., which to me was very special, I actually, when I first moved to L.A., I stayed with a family friend, and Uncle Elliot actually, you know, I didn't realize lived so close by, and was kind enough to pick me up, and I met his daughter, Sydney, and they took me out to lunch, I think, at the Marmalade Cafe, I think it was.
Sure. We still go there.
In Calabasas, which I loved. And then it was even more of a treat because I don't know if you remember this, but on the way when you dropped me back, you know, we were talking in the car. I think Sydney must have been maybe 13. We were all talking about music. Which was the connection to me for the. The funny part is, the connection to Uncle Elliot to me was watches. The connection for me to Uncle Elliot was music. So it was kind of, it was the reverse, but it was simpatico at the same time.
But the craziest thing was that, what are the odds that your family lives up the street from me?
That was, yes.
You know, and then I met your sister and I met your family, and that was very nice.
It was nice for me too, and it really meant a lot. And on the way back from lunch, you'd made a tape of Sydney singing a Chrissy Hynde song. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, of course. Was it
"I'll Stand by You" or was it?
Good memory. It was exactly that song.
And,
"I'll Stand by You," because we only did a couple. We did that. And we did Bang Bang, My Baby Shot Me Down, Nancy Sinatra.
Yeah.
We did a couple of funny songs. But, yeah, it was absolutely the Chrissy Hynde. And, of course, she is a fantastic singer and went on to have a great high school career as leader of her a cappella group. She was, like, you know, head of her a cappella group. And that group went on to, like, go into competition against universities. And they'd be the only high school a cappella group. This is Calabasas High. They're called Unstrumental. And they'd go against USC, UCLA, all these colleges, and beat them all. These kids sang their butts off, and they're all, you know, like, you know, going to, like, amazing schools now. They're all at, like, you know, NYU and all these.
That's amazing.
Music, and they're all still singing.
That's amazing. And you know, I just remember even at that age, she was so young, but she was so in tune with it. Like, you know, it's almost like she herself had that emotional intelligence as well. Like, she it wasn't just the kid who was singing. It was, like, a very gifted.
She's very wise. She's, I guess, what some people would say, an old soul. But she, well, you should see her now. She's 20 years old.
Oh, my God. Well, please give her my regards, Uncle Elliot, and I hope one day I get to see her again.
Of course you will.
Thank you so much. So I just kind of wanted to get into Uncle Elliot, really. I mean, I don't know a more humble guy, whether in any business, it doesn't matter what it is, but for who he is, and what he's accomplished in his life,
well,
I, I, I mean this with all sincerity. I've never met a more humble and more genuine person.
Well, thank you for saying that. And, you know, people get into music for different reasons. A lot of people in rock and roll get into it, let's be honest, to meet girls and be popular.
Right.
But while that's very nice, my background is slightly different. My mother was a Juilliard-trained singer who had her own radio show singing on Yiddish radio in New York in the 40s.
Oh, cool.
And but she sang like Judy Garland or Rosemary Clooney. She's like a great pop singer. And, you know, it just never happened for her. She got married, and that's how it was in those days, and she gave up her career. But there was always a ton of music in the house, and she gave me the gift of music. You know, as a baby, I would listen to, you know, George Gershwin, Rhapsody in Blue, and Tchaikovsky, and all this wonderful music, and the pop music, too, because she was a singer. She loved Judy Garland, and she loved Rosemary Clooney and Julie London and all those singers. And she sounded just as good as any of them. She'd sing around the house all the time. So I didn't get I got into music as a baby, so obviously I didn't get into it to be popular with girls. I got into it just because I fell in love with it. And so I've never had that thing about, like, trying to be, like, a big shot or a wise guy just because I play the guitar. I mean, I don't see that as a carte blanche to act like a jerk. It's just what I do, and it's what I love, and it's sacred to me. I would never abuse it that way.
Well, that says a lot about your character, Uncle Elliot, because in this world that we're living in, whether it's older rock stars or newer rock stars, it's all about ego, and I can truly say you don't have any. I mean, the very fact that...
I do, believe me, I do. it comes, I mean, I think, you know, to be a lead guitar player, you have to have an ego.
I mean, I think you have to be confident with what you do, but in terms of, like, being...
There's a plane going overhead. I went outside to
have... Good, I like the sound effects, Uncle Elliot. You pulled out all the stops.
I went outside to have a cigarette. Yeah, I called special effects.
Thank you for the special effects.
Yeah, we go.
But that's, I mean, that's really cool. And I mean, obviously, like, you know, those of you out there or anyone who's, you know, who knows music, I mean, the Cars influenced so many bands. One of my favorite bands right now of all time, The Strokes. I mean, they cite you guys as a reference, like a major, major influence.
Yeah. I think they've even worked with Rick Ocasek. He was going to produce them or something, or met with them. I don't know, but there is a connection there.
There's a huge connection. In fact, I don't know if you saw. I tagged you in it because we're Facebook friends as well. Of course, I tagged you, but they covered Just What I Needed in Reading, and they played with Pulp lead singer. Jarvis Cocker.
Yeah, Jarvis Cocker, right?
And it was incredible because, I mean, obviously, the guitar playing, you can't really compare. I mean, but he's a very good guitar player. The guitar player who plays for the Strokes,
mm-hmm.
Nick Valenti, he did as good a job as you can, but nowhere close to yours.
You know, it's funny. I've gone on YouTube, you know, when people tell me, and I've heard Nirvana do Best Friend's Girl, and... I think the Smashing Pumpkins did a Cars song, like, in concert. And I always listen, but, you know, they never get the solo right.
Well, I think you put in a lot of, like, you just put in pure passion, Uncle Elliot. This, to me, is definitive of who Uncle Elliot sort of is, not just as a musician, but as a person. He puts everything he has into it. You were wearing, I think, a double-breasted suit. You were with your band, the Tiki Gods.
Yeah,
and you invited me to a gig in L.A. I've forgotten the venue's name, but I don't think it matters.
The Hotel Cafe, I believe.
It was not the. It was like next to the Rainbow Room or across from the Rainbow Room.
Oh yes, Billboard Live, or it was downstairs, the Plush Room.
Exactly, and you played a thing in front of a few hundred people, and you were wearing like a very cool, like double-breasted mod type suit. And you were wearing, like, these incredible suede slippers with skull and crossbones on them.
Yep, and a crisscross tie like the Rat Pack used to wear.
Exactly. And I'm like, this is in front of like 200 people. Like this is insane. Like this is a mod god, and you know you're playing so effortlessly, and you're playing like the theme song to Hawaii Five-O and all these really cool.
Oh yeah,
Star
Goldfinger,
Trek.
Star Trek, all these crazy songs.
and there I am, like this little Indian, like just watching my Uncle Elliot. And I hadn't seen you, I think, then for probably 2 years or 3 years. But it was so cool to see you perform in that setting. And then, you know, you've obviously been on tour, like, you know, like up and down, like over the years. With
oh, my God, for
everyone.
Almost 40 years now.
That's amazing. And now your new band.
My new? I would love to tell your listeners about my new band. It's called The Empty Hearts. And there's some very special people playing with me in this band. On drums, we have the great Clem Burke from Blondie.
Amazing.
And fantastic lead singer, Wally Palmer, who your music fans and people who know would remember that he's in a band called The Romantics and wrote That's What I Like About You and Talking in Your Sleep. That's our lead singer.
Amazing.
And our bass player is an amazing guy, too, Andy Babiuk. My Ukrainian buddy, who wrote books, the Beatles gear book and the Rolling Stones gear book, and
wow.
Is expert on that. And he was in a kind of a garage rock band that got a lot of notoriety. In fact, they were even appeared in the show The Sopranos. They were called the Chesterfield Kings.
Oh, I know exactly who they are. Yeah,
that was Andy's band. So we have this group called The Empty Hearts now, and we have an album out that. It's available on iTunes and Amazon, and we're very proud of it. And it's all original music. And if people just know me from the Cars, they might find it interesting because it's a much harder rocking thing, and there's a lot of Beatle influence in there. And
and the Beatles are like your favorite group of all time, right?
Almost more like a religion.
It's a religion, yeah. It's like, absolutely. I mean, I think what the Ramones are to me is what the Beatles are to you. And if you just looking at the you know Uncle Elliot's Facebook page, I mean the amount of amazing photos that you post up there on various you know trivia on the Beatles and their guitars and stuff like that. It's just so cool to see that
yeah.
You still have such a passion and love for it.
Well, I mean I'm one of those kids who saw them that first night on the Ed Sullivan Show, and I was so shook up by it that I couldn't even sleep that night. I tossed and turned because, thinking of it in retrospect, I saw my future laid out before me. I knew that this was all I wanted to do with the rest of my life when I saw that. And it's kind of pretty much what happened. And
yeah.
I'm so fortunate because, you know, you could say, yeah, you and 70 million other people saw that show, but not that many got to do what I did, and I'm so grateful and so fortunate in my life to have achieved that. Because when people would say, what do you want to accomplish? And all I wanted to accomplish was to be in a great band that you would recognize on the radio after two notes. And I think that we accomplished
it, 100%.
There's a lot of bands out there, but the Cars was an original band. It was, you know, our own sound, our own kind of almost our own idiom, and turns out to have been somewhat influential. I hear that influence in younger bands. You mentioned the Strokes. Ed from Collective Soul has told me what a big impact the Cars have had on his band, and other people have told me that. And
well, how can you not? I mean, you really...
Killers.
You really brought that... You know, there's like that, you know, really, really like... sort of syncopated British new wave sound, and then there was that incredible, like, it wasn't really commercial, but it was almost relatable new wave commercial sound that you guys brought to the forefront and sort of made accessible to a more mainstream audience, which I don't think a lot of bands really were able, like, you had a lot of one-hit wonders from the Brits that,
yeah.
You know, yeah, you can name, you can't even name the name of the band. You're like, oh, yeah, I know that song, but I don't know who sang it. But
yeah,
Cars,
like Walking on Sunshine or any of those songs by, you know, groups have one song that you know. And No, we were very lucky that way. And it's nothing that we could have ever planned on or calculated. We didn't know if the band was going to make it or not, honestly. We flew to London to make the first record with Queen's producer, Roy Thomas Baker, and we had so much fun doing it. I was 23. I'd hardly ever been anywhere. And to be in that atmosphere and to be recording at George Martin's studio in London, Air Studios, and
have wow.
McCartney's in the studio next door, and George Martin is coming in to listen to our to our sessions, and I was in heaven. And so I distinctly remember having a conversation with one of the other guys in the band, saying, "God, this is so great. We just hope we sell enough records so that we can make a second record because we loved it so much."
Wow, that's so cool.
We never knew. You don't know, but turns out that a lot of people liked it.
Well, what's amazing to me is like I read somewhere or I heard somewhere, and you can please quote me if I'm wrong because I don't want to mess the information up, but I just remember hearing or reading like during that time because you guys all met in Boston, right?
That's right.
And so I just remember, and I'm from Boston originally, so it's very near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, go to Berklee College of Music.
You went to Berklee College of Music, and I just, from what I read or remember hearing, was that all these, like, you had given, I think, your demo to a DJ at WBCN or something like that.
Yeah, Max Ann,
and all these other bands like Aerosmith and all these other bands that were huge at the time, they were all on major labels,
right?
And I think Just What I Needed had just come out and was being played on heavy rotation, and you guys weren't signed to a label, and it just said, The Cars.
Well,
demo.
here's what it is. You've got it. That's very much what happened. What it was that in the radio industry, they have these what they call tip sheets.
Right.
The Gavin Report and the Friday Morning Quarterback, I think one was called. And what they were, radio stations would subscribe to these newsletters, and they would see what the big markets were playing, and they would decide whether to add those records or not. And in Boston on WBCN, just as you described, BCN would publish what they were playing that week, what was in their top 10. And so it would say, Aerosmith, Back in the Saddle, or, Elton John and Columbia Records and Elton John, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, Rocket Records, whatever, and say, The Cars, Just What I Needed, tape. And, just our simple little two-track demo tape that we made live was in heavy rotation in one of the biggest radio stations in the country. Needless to say, when A&R people from New York and the big record companies who also read these tip sheets, they would see this. Who are these guys? The Cars. They're in heavy rotation with just a demo tape. And so they started flying up to Boston to check us out at the Paradise and the Rat and stuff. And we had all these record companies coming to see us. And at that point, from there it happened rather quickly, and we ended up signing with Elektra Records. But it's an unbelievable story. It could never happen again because no radio station would play a band's demo tape in heavy rotation. I mean, it's unheard of.
Well, none of this was planned. I mean, this was your fate. This was meant to happen. It was just,
Just make this stuff up. I mean, it's just, I always like to say, everybody, even if you have talent and drive, you still need a little miracle to turn the trick and just to make things happen. You need a break. And
you created that with The Cars and so many other things. And just so you know, like, Just What I Needed is probably one of my favorite songs of all time. When I was in London for my sister's 40th birthday last year, we were at a very, very cool club where they had different sections of different rooms. And one room was a karaoke room. And I did Just What I Needed. I sang it.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I almost felt like you were there with me. And it was almost like I was wearing shades and I had my eyes closed. And the whole theme of the party was 70s. So I look like a 70s Indian
pimp. New wave rocker.
I was wearing an Afro wig, but I look like, like a shady Indian pundit with aviator Ray-Bans from the 70s and you know, like beads around my neck, and I had got the whole place going, and it was like purely because of my love for that song and for you. So
that's an awesome story. That's great.
You continue to inspire me, Uncle Elliot. And honestly, like, I just, you know, getting into the Watch thing for a second.
Yeah.
How did you get into Watch it? Like, what was the impetus behind you saying, you know what, there's something there? Was it man and machine, like a guy connecting to the pedal of a car, or in your case, was it much like it was with a guitar, like a man, you know, like an amazing talent strumming a guitar and connecting with that? Like,
well,
what was it for you?
Well, this is amazing, but for my first birthday, my uncle gave me a Davy Crockett watch. This is in the 50s. And Davy Crockett was a big star on television. And it was like, you know, it was like getting a Mickey Mouse watch. It had Davy Crockett on it. And I loved that thing. And I was fascinated by the way you could wind it up and it would come to life. And I never lost my love for that. Even going up into, you know, adult life, I was privileged to take Jaeger LeCoultre's master class one year at the Beverly Hills Hotel. And one of the master watchmakers from Jaeger LeCoultre was there from Switzerland. And I, along with 20 other people, I suppose, they put us in lab coats and gave us loops and gave us those desks where your elbows are way up by your shoulders, the way watchmakers work on watches. And everybody had a computer program. And we took apart a reverso movement and put it back together. And that was unbelievable. I mean, I had this pile of springs and pinions and screws and stuff.
Balance wheels and all those things.
Some of them so tiny that you needed to look at them with a magnifying glass or through a loop and use a tweezers to handle them. And somehow I got this thing back together and wound it up and it ran. And that was just so fun. And you know, I'd have to say still that Jaeger is still my favorite of all watches. I just love that brand.
Very cool, Uncle Elliot, because to me that's a brand that, you know, epitomizes and exudes sophistication, coolness, class, art deco, to the almost like, I'm sure you know the term Populux.
Uh-huh.
It's got those elements. It's almost like a New York skyscraper building from the 40s, you know, or 50s.
It really is. I mean, well, in the case of the Reverso, I can't think of too many items that have been in continuous production since the Art Deco era of the 30s that
absolutely,
you still go to a store and buy a Jaeger LeCoultre Reverso watch, and it's still basically the same as it was in 1931 when, you know, stainless steel was a new material and it was modern and but they still make it. And I love the classic quality of Jaeger LeCoultre, and also the fact that I thought they were amazing value for the money. What you know, but what some people don't know, is that Jaeger is one of the few true manufacturers that make their own movements, and those movements can some Patek Philippe watches have Jaeger movements in them. And
that is correct. And some Vacheron watches used to have Jaeger LeCoultre.
Vacheron have Jaeger movements. So they're a very special company. And I started out with them. I fell in love with the Master Control series. And I wanted a simple 60s-looking dress watch, just stainless steel with a silver sunray dial, and arrow-shaped indices, and on a nice shiny black croc strap, and they had the model, the Master Control, the Master Grand Tie, which was just time and date, nothing fancy, and it had that real 60s kind of just simple, cool-looking watch, you know, and it was just the perfect version of that. You know, there's a lot of watches that you could describe that way, but theirs, to me, just the thinness of the bezel and the quality of the finishing and the polishing and the fit and finish and just the way it looked, everything about it was, you know, it fit the golden ratio, let's put it that way. It was perfect.
And you still love it. And you and I were discussing the other day that you would love to have, I think, a Master Ultra Thin 41 millimeter.
The Grand Tie is, I think, 37 millimeters.
That's right.
As we both know, you know, the trend has been towards larger watches. And as I get older, it wouldn't be bad to have one that's a little easier to read. So, I mean, I would love to have a 40 millimeter thin, you know, dress Jaeger. One day I'll get one.
I know you will. And I'm sure, like, after you took the master class, just because, you know, a lot of people out there don't understand or realize why watches are the price they are. I'm sure you must, I mean, through that experience of going to the master class, which very few people actually have the honor and privilege of doing, which I myself have.
What a first class operation those people are.
It's beyond. You truly have respect for the art form and for the you know, men and women who are constructing these very, very small machines to perform the way they perform. You realize why they are the way they are priced the way they are.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And the decoration of the movements I didn't realize how tiny some of the parts were. I mean, they were just hard to see with an ordinary eye. But here's an interesting little aside that you'll enjoy. When my wife Jill and I got together and I wanted to get her like an engagement present, now usually someone would buy a ring.
Right.
But not me. I got Jill a Reverso Duetto.
Oh.
One side has the diamonds around it and the other side is for daytime. The diamonds are for evening. On a gorgeous white, shiny, beautiful white croc strap. And she didn't know much about watches or anything, but she knew when she was in the presence of something special, and she just loved it. And so I gave her an engagement watch.
How cool is that?
That cool?
That's super cool because it's, you know, rings, of course, you see them, but watches are even more special because they're really a token of somebody's personality and style.
Well, in my case, that's certainly the truth. I mean, if I was going to select something for her, I knew a whole lot more about watches than I did about rings. And, you know, I felt like that's what I wanted to give her. She didn't have a good watch. And that's, you know, she loves it.
That's such a special story, and I hope she wears it in the best of health and happiness.
Thank you.
For many years to come. And Uncle Ellie, what are the other like brands of watches that you like today that you see that you can connect with, or do you feel like, I mean, I have this, you know, this debate with various watch collectors, and Uncle Elliot, by the way, is very respected amongst some of the watch forums, and I think he was more active back in the day than he is now.
But I was profiled in Watch Time magazine and Guitar Aficionado, which is sort of like a luxury magazine. Its focus is guitars, wine, exotic cars, and watches.
That's so cool.
And they did a feature on musicians and their watches, and they had Ron Wood, who I guess likes watches a lot, and I was in there, and some other people who enjoy watches. I know Eric Clapton is a big collector of, like, you know, vintage Pateks and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, spending millions
absolutely
some of these things. I guess I kind of got known as a watch guy, and when you meet another watch guy, it's always fun, you know?
Well, I think that's kind of the bond that you and I had. We have bonds on many different levels, but that's certainly one of them, and obviously that was the impetus of this show. But one of the last things I kind of wanted to talk to you about, which was very special to me, was that, you know, and as you know, I've mentioned this to you many times, Andy Warhol is a massive, massive influence in my life. And I'm going to start doing something very cool and watches the way Warhol did with portraits in the 60s.
Well, you know, obviously, you know that Andy, not only was he in her video for Hello Again, he directed it.
Which is why, yeah, exactly why I wanted to talk. Like, what was that experience like?
Great. He, I'll tell you what. Andy was very, very shy around us. Rick got to know him a bit better, and he did a couple of paintings of Rick in that style that he does, you know, that – portrait style, large paintings. But he was very shy. I mean, you couldn't kind of like shoot the breeze with him. He wasn't that kind of person. He is, you know, obviously very, very much the artist, and he was shy. You know, it was just hard to like get him, bring him out of himself. But he made a cameo in the video as a bartender, I think, and it was just great having him there. And you know, we love him. You know, we're all, you know, going back to the Velvet Underground and his involvement in rock and roll. It goes back to the middle '60s. So he always loved that. And so yeah, it was an honor to work with him and to, you know, for. It, you know, it'll always be there. It's part of history now. But I don't think he ever was involved in another band's music video.
No, he wasn't. You can't say he was.
No, not that I can recall either. And so, you know, it's just another one of those things that happen in life that's like you just pinch yourself. You know, it's like playing at Live Aid or the US Festival or some of these huge gigs where there's 500,000 people in the audience or 1 billion people watching on satellite.
That's pretty remarkable. And Uncle Elliot, I'm sure you must be friends still with a lot of musicians that, you know, from your past and new musicians and stuff like that. Do you feel, I'm sure, I mean, you more than anyone would know best, but I'm sure the industry has changed to 180, right? I mean, obviously since the...
Oof. Boy, has it ever. I mean, from the days when the cars were making records, when they were actually records, let's just start with that. I mean, we started out, there was no such thing as CDs. And so, you know, the cars initially were available on vinyl, cassette, and 8-track. So we really saw the whole thing. You know, by the time we were done, it was all about CDs. But as far as the music industry, I mean, it's hard to even know what to say. It's gotten so weird. And, you know, with streaming, you know, it's hard to get paid for your music anymore. It's just things have gotten a little bit weird.
It's become really hairy. And I have to say, too, another thing that's become weird in the music industry for me, as being a real fan of live music, is electronic dance music has taken over. And I live in Vegas, so I see, that's all I see.
Yeah.
And I want to run away from it because some guys are talented, but some half, which, you know, pressing buttons, being paid millions of dollars a year, and, you know, the whole live experience is not even there anymore. Like,
well, I mean, I have all the respect in the world for someone like Skrillex or, you know, those people. But, you know, if history has taught us anything, it's that no phase lasts forever. For instance, in the 20s and 30s, the trumpet players were the gunslingers, and those were the heroes, whether it was Louis Armstrong or whoever you want to talk about. And then in the 30s and 40s and into the 50s, it was the sax players, Charlie Parker and Stan Getz and John Coltrane.
Legends.
Know, they were all, you know, Sonny Rollins and all those guys, and they were the gunslingers. Then we get to the 60s, and everybody wants to play guitar, and the guitar, you know, the guitar hero, so quote, you know, so called, is born.
Yeah.
But it wasn't there forever, and it won't be there forever. There's always going to be an evolution, and you know, it's not always for the better. I mean, obviously, as a guitarist, I would love to see guitar be the king of the hill forever, but it's not the way it goes. If history has taught us anything, it's that nothing, everything is a phase, and you can't stop evolution, whether you approve of the progress or you think it's a step backwards, whatever it is, the next bunch of kids coming up want something different from their older brothers and sisters or their parents. They want something of their own. And you can't stop technology. And so, I mean, I think it's just all tied together. I think the DJing is part, you know, I mean, you know, going back to when we started, nobody had a computer. There were no cell phones. And so all this technology and social media and stuff has come to the forefront nowadays. And in music, the technology has followed along, too. And so, you know, everything is MIDI and digital and stuff like that. But I'll tell you a funny quote. I had the privilege of staying up till 4 in the morning with Les Paul one night at his house.
Wow.
And he was just regaling us with fantastic stories about his career and playing in the White House for Eisenhower and all this stuff. And we got into the same subject, and he said to me, he goes, you know what, Elliot? He says, if when I see Gene Autry ride in on a white horse playing a synthesizer, then I'll think about switching from guitar. And I thought that was just a great, great take on it. Because
that's amazing. That's incredible. Wow.
Not because the guitar has so much romance to it. First of all, it's shaped like a woman.
Yep.
It has a narrow waist and hips, and there's just something romantic about it, going even back to Spanish music, and it's just a beautifully evocative instrument and can do so much. You know, it can solo, it can be accompaniment, you play chords, you play single note stuff, any kind of music from classical to country to punk rock to whatever you want to name, the guitar is the perfect instrument. But like I say, you know, time marches on. You were asking me, I just wanted to just touch on something. Well, you were asking me how the music business has changed. And it has changed 180. And one significant thing that I've observed is that when the cars were in their heyday, we made most of our living selling records and would tour basically to promote the album. And that has completely flip-flopped now to where musicians make their primary living playing live, and records are just sort of almost a means of promotion, something to promote a tour and stuff. But you know, all the money is made playing out. Where we'd come home from a tour, we didn't really even care if we made anything. We'd spend it all on limos and Ritz-Carltons and Four Seasons.
Yeah.
You're selling millions and millions of records. But you know, very few people do that anymore.
Well, there's no. It's all digital, and like you said, there's no artistic license anymore.
People think they're entitled to just download your song, and they don't understand that that's what you feed your family with.
1,000,000%. That's your voice. Those are your hands playing. Those are, you know, that's your commitment, and
it's intellectual property, even though you can't touch it with your hands. It's in the air, and so
yep.
People assume that it's just
it's up for grabs.
Yeah, but far from it. If they only knew what went into creating it.
That's amazing, Uncle Elliot. And I think, and to end this on a beautiful note, is you've also you know, being an amazing musician yourself, and you know, being so revered in the industry and respected, you've also had the incredible opportunity as well to design guitars.
I've had 6 signature models now.
That's unbelievable.
I've had a Martin acoustic signature model, 2 different models with Gibson, a Gretsch signature model, and a Kramer signature model. Like, maybe that's 5. Anyway, it's more than anybody deserves, and I've been very fortunate because I love guitars, and I've visited so many guitar factories, and I know how guitars are built, and I know how to work within the system, much like yourself with watches. You know what's possible, and you know what to ask for, you know what not to ask for. And so it's very easy for guitar companies to work with me because I do understand the process. And in every case, you know, I've had representatives from the company say, you know, well, that's one of the best guitars we've ever put out, you know. And,
that's so cool.
You know, because I know what it should be. I know what it should have to be.
And I'm sure it doesn't get old. Like, you know, for you, with that, you know, that dream you had when you saw the Beatles on that Sullivan show, being a guitarist.
Let me tell you something. If you would have told me then when I was 10 years old that one day I would have a Gibson guitar with my name on it, I would have thought you had 2 heads. I would have thought you were crazy. Never mind 5 different models.
It's amazing.
It's like a dream come true, right? You know, to this day, I can't believe it. And I get wonderful messages, like on Facebook, from people who have bought my various models of my guitar telling me how much they love it and how important it is to them and stuff. So that makes me feel really good.
Well, you're a good person and a good man. And what I love about your guitars, too, is that you add a little bit of detail with the tiki stuff, you know, which
yeah.
I love on the frets, right?
Yes. I've always loved that tiki, that exotica lounge thing. I don't know why, but I've always loved that. And so the Tiki Gods was just sort of an opportunity to, let's say, scratch that itch, you know, of I always wanted, you know, people know me playing pop music and rock music. And, you know, there's more to me than that. And I love the melodicism of those old songs. They have such beautiful melodies and they're so interesting how they're constructed and stuff. And I don't see that kind of craftsmanship all the time today. So, you know, sometimes I can be a little bit retro.
Well, I think you are the definition of that, Uncle Elliot. And you inspire me, and I couldn't be more grateful to you for this opportunity to seriously have this conversation, because it means so much to me.
Well, thank you, Rabbi Amit. And you started to ask me a question. I just want to wrap things up by answering it, because I never did answer it. You started to ask me what other brands of watches I love.
Right.
And I'll tell you, besides Jaeger LeCoultre, I love IWC.
Yep.
And I love Vacheron Constantin. And after that, I have to sort of think hard. You know, I mean, I guess those are my favorites, you know, and it shouldn't, I know it doesn't surprise you at all, because those are classics. And I mean, I love a nice Rolex. But, you know, as I got into watches, as great as Rolexes are, I came to understand that a lot of people who really don't know much about watches, they just automatically think that because that's the only brand they know, they think Rolex is the best watch that you can get. So they buy a Rolex watch. But, you know, having delved deeper into it, and I'm not in any way, I mean, because Rolex are fantastic watches and they're built like a tank and I love
them. They are.
And I have a Submariner date, but those are my favorites.
I think you have to stay with the classics, because at the end of the day, the classics withstand the test of time.
Yep.
No pun intended. So you have impeccable taste, Uncle Elliot, and I can't wait to shoot the shit with you live in person over a meal, whether it be in L.A. or New York or Las Vegas, wherever it may be. And I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
I do as well. Always a pleasure.
Wow, man. Well, that was a dream come true. I've been trying to do this interview for many years. And what a sweet man. What a sweet, genuine person Elliot Easton is. Uncle Elliot, he is to me. And I can't thank him enough for his time and his insight and his experience, not just with watches, but with music and culture and everything that we talked about. It was really an amazing interview, and I'll never forget it, and I couldn't be more grateful to him. I'd also like to thank my sponsors, Cape Cod Polishing Cloth and Retrospects at the Cosmopolitan Hotel of Las Vegas. You can check those both websites out. For Retrospects, it's www.retrospects.com. For Cape Cod Polishing Cloth, it's www.capecodpolish.com. I'd also like to thank Shalvoy Music and DJ Flipside for providing the musical tracks to this podcast. If you want to know what's going on with me and the watch industry, you can check out my website at www.amitdevhonda.com. Please email me with questions at amitdevhonda@gmail.com. If you're a fan of Instagram and Twitter, you can check out my handles at AmitDevHonda, where you can see various pictures of watches and updates of what I'm up to and where I am all over the world. Please don't forget to like my Facebook watch page. If you want to be informed without committing to my blog on a daily basis, I will throw the link down below, but please sign up for my weekly newsletter. And until we meet again, rock on and fly back.